Canmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 9 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, we are less than a week from opening day. This is a wonderful time. I always like to call it a Jewish person's Christmas. I'm a Jew, so this is Christmas coming up.
Less than a week is a crazy way to be like, oh, there's 2 days until opening day.
Yeah. I don't know why I phrased it like that, but there are 2 days until opening day, and this is my Christmas. I am very excited. I know you are too.
Yeah, I'm pumped. Technically, you weren't wrong. 2 days is less than a week. That's a fact.
Yeah, it is.
There's no denying that. But yeah, I'm super excited. Obviously, we got some sun shining today, like 50 degrees, some nicer weather on the horizon, and then, of course, the Red Sox playing baseball with legitimate expectations for the first time really since 2019, I feel like, coming off of that World Series win. So I'm excited to get into things, and it kind of feels like we've gotten to the, well, we're well beyond the monotonous part of spring training where it's like, all right, what the fuck are we going to talk about for the next 2 weeks until opening day? And boy, did people find some stuff to talk about. And a lot of it kind of pissed me off, specifically the narrative around Marcelo Meyer and people just trying to rush him up.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I mean, pretty much all spring training, there was just media fiascos making something out of pretty much nothing. We saw that with Devers. That was the main thing. He seems fine. But the biggest piece of news to come out of this last week and all the roster cuts is Christian Campbell has made the opening day roster.
Yeah, it's kind of the worst kept secret in baseball because the last like week or so, Cora has been trotting out the opening day starting lineup or pretty much close to it, and Christian Campbell's been at second base in every single one of those games, so they kind of let the cat out of the bag over a week ago, and it really seemed like that was the way things were trending the entirety of the spring, and it was on Vaughn Grissom to steal that job from Christian Campbell. Ultimately, he didn't do that. He got optioned to AAA, where he's going to work on some things and see what he can do, and Campbell's going to be the opening day second baseman for the team. And I was looking earlier, he has the second lowest odds to win Rookie of the Year. He's plus 500, and 40-year-old Jason Dominguez, who's been a top 100 prospect for like 8 years now, has the lowest odds at like plus 420.
Nice. Oh boy. Yeah, give me a break on the Jason Dominguez hype train. I mean, that has left the station probably about 3-4 years ago at this point. It is interesting to me though.
If he was a Arizona Diamondback and his nickname wasn't the Martian, people would be talking about him as one of the all-time prospect busts, but because he's a New York Yankee and his nickname is the Martian, everybody's all fired up about him. And like I said, he's been a top 100 prospect since like 2019. So like eventually to still be considered a Rookie of the Year favorite, I'd like to see it at the major league level at some point.
Got some Ben Simmons comparisons I'm hearing.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, he's a rookie in his fifth year, eligible for Rookie of the Year, which like I think there should be some sort of like penalty for that. Like, I don't think they should get the pick if he wins Rookie of the Year. He's been a rookie for 10 years. Like,
He has come up in the majors a bit too. I think it was 2 years ago, and then he was hurt all of last year. Yeah.
He had Tommy John, I want to say.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's been kind of a mess, his whole development. And I'm tired of hearing Yankee fans hype him up. I don't know how well he'll pan out. I think obviously he's going to make some sort of impact this year, but the interesting thing about Campbell I found is, I mean, it's kind of right in your face, but his spring training stats were not that good.
No.
I think it's interesting that they're still kind of riding it out and letting him see what he's got at the major league level. It's something that a lot of teams would be hesitant to do. I mean, we saw it with the Pirates last year with Paul Skeens, obviously a pitcher different than a position player, but you even saw it with Jackson Holliday last year. I know we've been doing that comparison a decent amount on this podcast, but I don't know. I'm happy with it, to be honest, because you're going to have to embrace the youth movement at some point this year. You may as well just get it going right from the jump. And I think Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony will get called up sooner rather than later too. So it just is cool to see that they're like, okay, this year we go all in. Let's just call up the young guys, let them figure it out up here. That is the right way to do things, I think.
Yeah, I think it's also a lot more palatable to be moving Rafael Devers off of third base for Alex Bregman to play third when you have Christian Campbell, who's pretty widely regarded as a top five prospect in the sport by pretty much every major media outlet. So rather than someone like David Hamilton or Vaughn Grissom. Right. And Vaughn Grissom, I feel bad for him. That trade just keeps looking worse and worse for the Red Sox, obviously, with Sale winning the Cy Young and whatnot, but when you're talking about a guy with Campbell's ceiling and Campbell's level of talent, it's like, all right, Rafi, like, we're moving you off third base, but we're adding a gold glove third baseman there, and we have a top five prospect in the sport taking over at second base. So it's not like you're just slotting in David Hamilton there and being like, sorry, Rafi, tough shit, you're out of luck.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too, is they have the depth now, and they have, you know, the upside of these young guys to play around with, rather than being like, let's trot out Romy Gonzalez and Connor Wong at second base and see if something sticks. So all throughout their roster, you can just see the depth. I mean, we'll get into the pitching injuries and all that and how the bottom end of the rotation has shaped out. But it's just cool to see that even with these injuries that the Red Sox have been dealing with throughout spring training, you're still feeling pretty good about where they're at heading into the year.
Right, especially when you look around to the rest of the league and you see the Yankees are completely falling apart. Stanton is going to start the year on the IL. Their pitching staff is in complete shambles. Like a month ago, Marcus Stroman was bitching and moaning that he doesn't want to be a bullpen arm, and now he's their number three starter. So that's where they're at as far as injuries are concerned. The Orioles, they let Corbin Burnes walk, which it doesn't really even seem now at this point that they let Burnes walk, because he said that the Red Sox and Orioles were the two teams that were hottest on his tail. But they didn't replace Corbin Burnes once he was dead set on going to Arizona. And they were like, all right, we're willing to go with Grayson Rodriguez. And now he has some elbow inflammation. His elbow's barking again. He's not going to be ready for the start of the year. So when you look around the American League East and you see some of the other things that the other teams are dealing with, and they don't have that same depth, and you look at the Red Sox where they're going to have Cutter Crawford, Brian Bello, and Lucas Giolito all start the season on the IL, and you're sitting there going, all right, we're still in a pretty good position. Like, we still have Quinn Priester sitting in AAA ready to come up at this like Walters.
Yeah, exactly. And, we can get to the rotation stuff later, but I know you had something on Campbell about missing out on the video of Cora bringing that up to him.
Oh, yeah, I want to say that Ian Brown tweeted out that when told Campbell that he was making the roster, he asked him to rattle off all the Georgia Tech players to ever crack the big leagues, and there were 64 of them, and he rattled off however many he could, and Cora was like, yep, and you can add Christian Campbell to that list, which I think is a really cool moment and a really cool way of doing things. But where's the video? Like, we see all these guys when all top prospects get called up, the social media teams hide cameras in the manager's office or wherever they get called up from, and they get a video of their reactions. We just didn't get that, at least yet. I know we haven't gotten an official announcement from the team that Campbell's making the roster, so maybe that's what they're waiting for. But like Cora's talked about how he's made the team. Campbell met with the media and told them that, like, how he broke the news to his parents and things like that. I want to see a video. It's like, it's not that big of a deal that they didn't do one yet, but it's a cool thing to see, and I like seeing those videos, so I'd like to get one.
Yeah, definitely, and it seems like with all the hype around the big three, it would be a big missed opportunity if they didn't put something out. I think they will probably when they make, you know, the big, here's our opening day roster announcement, and then they'll put something out. So I assume we'll get it, but that does transition well into Marcelo Meyer, who did have a pretty like sizable better spring than
he was hitting the shit Campbell out of the ball,
like throughout the entire spring training, and he is going to start the season in AAA, which honestly I'm not too surprised about. I hear some people, you know, with getting their pitchforks out ready to burn down Fenway Park and everything for Meyer not making the roster, but we have to remember he has not played an inning of AAA baseball yet. He was injured when the big three all got called up to Worcester at the same time. So I think you give him a little bit more time. He's probably going to continue tearing the cover off the ball in AAA, and he'll be up here, I'm going to say, by end of May.
Yeah, and I think the thing with him, too, is him and Anthony, is that they're both lefties, and mm-hmm. we know how Cora likes to use lefty rookies. He doesn't like to have them out there against lefties, and I think both of those guys, Meyer and Anthony, both have some work to do against same-handed pitchers, particularly in hitting breaking balls from them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something they still need to work at. And like you said, Meyer's spring was substantially better than Campbell's. Meyer hit 333 with I just had it up, 333 with a 455 OBP, good for a 983 OPS. Obviously, he had a monster night in last night against the Monterrey Sultanes, which I guess is a double A Mexican league team. So take that for what it's worth, which I don't think is a whole lot. But then when you look at Campbell's numbers, it's 167 with a 305 OBP, a 576 OPS. So like obviously Meyer was a lot better, but I think for both lineup balance and the sake of not having to platoon these guys, that Meyer's in AAA is for the best. And like you said, I think he's going to continue to hit the shit out of the ball and probably going to be a pretty early call up, especially when we've talked about it time and time again. We'll see what Trevor Story holds up. We know the back is already barking for him. So like, he'll probably be like, I think I said before, like by April Fool's Day, Meyer will be the starting shortstop. which obviously probably not, but we'll see how that holds up. And I mean, these guys are going to factor in, like, in these things sort themselves out over and over again. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not worried about it at all. I know people are pretty mad about it, but it made sense. You knew going into the year, going into spring training, that Christian Campbell was the closest to making the major league roster. And honestly, he didn't show that much, but they still put him on the major league roster. I'm not surprised at that at all. And I'm not surprised that Meyer didn't make it. But that's not to say this isn't a good sign to see him having a great spring training. Like, you know, spring training is what it is, and we've talked about it before, that we'll take the good stats if they fit our agendas, and the bad stats, who cares? But this is great to see. I mean, all signs are, you know, pointing the right way.
Yeah, one narrative that pisses me off about Marcelo Meyer is everybody talk like, oh, he's been a hyped prospect for however many years now, and he hasn't made his debut yet. He's still 22 years old. Yeah. First of all, he was drafted as a 18-year-old coming out of high school. And everyone says, oh, well, guys in his draft class have already made their debuts. Why hasn't he? Is he's not panning out the way that they thought he would? Blah, blah, blah. So here are the guys that made their debuts in his draft class. First overall pick, Henry Davis. He was a college bat. And how has he worked out for the Pirates? Not well. He can't hit his way out of a wet paper bag. They already moved him off catcher. He's an outfielder now. Jack Leiter, pitcher. Also college. Jackson Job, he got a cup of coffee at the end of last year and then completely shit his pants in the playoffs for the Tigers, but he was a high school arm as well. And then Meyer, Colton Cowser, obviously was in the running for rookie of the year last year, but he's another college bat. The one that everybody says is Jordan Lawler. And oh, Jordan Lawler already made his debut. Yeah, he has 31 plate appearances and is hitting sub 200. He's hitting sub 150. So, and he's had a whole lot of injury problems. Also, how do the Diamondbacks feel about him? They just gave Geraldo Perdomo a massive contract extension to play shortstop for them. So that should go to show you how they feel about that. And I've harped on it a lot. Development is not linear in baseball. It's not. It never has been. It never will be. These guys aren't just going to move up levels and automatically mash. And we haven't even seen Meyer in AAA to say that that's the case. So I'm not trying to make that point, but trying to compare Meyer to other guys in his draft class just doesn't make sense, because it isn't like, oh, well, it's not like the NFL where these guys come in and contribute immediately. Like, there's a lot of development that needs to be done, especially when you're talking about guys that you draft out of high school. Like, the jump from facing high school pitching to even single A or rookie ball pitching is enormous. You're like, you see these stats from high school kids, they're hitting like 800 in the regular season. Like, those numbers are just absolutely ridiculous and they're not feasible. And it annoys me when people be like, oh, well, he's been around since 2021. And we know that prospect fatigue is a thing, but it shouldn't be a thing for a guy like Marcelo Meyer, who he's had his injury concerns, but he's still hit at every single level. This shouldn't be a case of prospect fatigue. This is simply a case of the Boston media doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about, especially when it comes to prospects.
Yeah, one thing to add there is, number one pick, Henry Davis, isn't even on their major league roster this year, the Pirates roster.
Yeah, he didn't break camp with them.
Yeah, so obviously he needs more time in AAA. And even when he was called up, he wasn't doing well. Like you mentioned, they already switched him off catcher. And that draft class as a whole, everyone was talking about Marcelo Meyer being a steal at pick four. So let's remind ourselves that he still has a shot to be one of the best players in the league and the best player out of that draft class.
And he's showing you why in spring.
Exactly. So I don't know why we're so quick to give up on these guys or get mad at them simply because he's blocked by other people and they want to give him more time in AAA where he hasn't had an at-bat yet. I have no problem with that. And you don't need to rush him. These other teams who are worse than you have to rush their guys because they don't have anyone else to fill those spots. We've been beating this drum over and over again, but it is a great problem to have the depth that the Red Sox have at the major league level and in the minor leagues now. So let's just pump the brakes on that take. I don't know really where that's coming from.
And I think the lefty thing has a whole lot to do with it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if Meyer and Campbell were both righties and they were both at the same point, then maybe Meyer does win that second base job. But because of lineup balance and the platooning that we talked about earlier, that it ended up going to Campbell. And my buddy, who's a Tigers fan, said this. He was like, oh, like they're sending all these prospects down. And like, oh, isn't that's a bad sign for them? Like, what are we talking about here? Oh, no, the Red Sox have too many good players that they have to have a bunch of they have to have two top 15 prospects in the sport start the year in AAA. Like, what are we talking about? This is a fantastic problem to have. And I know Lou on Twitter has been beating that drum too. Like, oh, they have Abreu, they have Rafaela, and like, where is Anthony going to fit in? It's like, we have too many good players. What are we talking about? They have all the ammo in the world we're going to talk about the logjam that still hasn't been cleared, but they have all the ammo in the world to go out and make a massive splash at the trade deadline if they're right in the mix. Like, who knows where the Padres are going to be at? Who knows where the Marlins are going to be at with Sandy? They have the ammo to go out and swing a trade and land one of, if not the biggest fish of deadline season, whether it be Sandy Alcantara, Dylan Cease, Michael King, or any names that haven't even popped up in trade talks yet.
Yeah. And I am very much leaning towards that's how they're going to clear out this logjam. I mean, we have Masataka Yoshida in AAA, starting the year in AAA because of his throwing program, where he didn't play, I don't think he played an inning in the outfield last year. So it's just roster manipulations at this point, whatever
you want. And he's hitting like 340. In spring.
Exactly. So they don't have a spot for that guy. And we've mentioned this before in a past episode, but he would make an impact on a ton of other teams. And he's starting the year in AAA for the Red Sox. So we're chilling, man.
Like, they're just between a rock and a hard place with him because every team knows that they don't have a spot for him with the way that their roster is constructed now. And so why are they going to give up any kind of asset and pay the contract for him? And like I think there are plenty of teams that would take that contract under normal circumstances. But first of all, not very many teams go with a full-time DH at all times. And we know what the defensive metrics looked like when he was out in left field. And I don't care that they say like, it was two off seasons ago that they were like, oh yeah, we actually think the metrics are a lot better than, or his defense is a lot better than the metrics tell you. It's like, okay, well, the metrics tell me that he's like a -9 outs above average playing left field at Fenway Park. So I think he's bad at defense, and all those other teams have those same metrics. And even with the eye test, though, 2 years ago when he was out there, he looked lost a lot of the times. He looked like he needed a map to find the ball. So I just don't know what they're going to do with him. You said it. I think he's a contributor on a lot of major league teams, and a lot of teams could have a spot for a Masataka Yoshida in their lineup. It's just they're not going to give you something and pay the $18 million. And it feels like at this point, and for the last several weeks, it feels like we've just been heading down the DFA pathway, and it's just a matter of when it comes.
Yeah. And speaking of players with bad defense, I know you have in the notes here that Rafael Devers considered a trade during all this drama of him not wanting to be taken off of third base and all that. I don't have much to say on that other than like who was going to trade for him and make him a third baseman. Like the Red Sox are the only team who would have made him a third baseman at this point. Everyone else bringing him in is going to be like, okay, you're DHing. Like, I don't know what you want from us.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I put it in the notes like too, but like, can a brother crash out at work anymore? I mean, damn, what? Like, how many people crash out? Like, I crash out like once a month thinking about my job. So I don't know what, like, I don't know what the big deal is. And like, obviously he wasn't going to be happy, and he wasn't happy at all. The one thing I do want to talk about is the next media availability that he did with the translator. And he was like, when he talked about sitting down with Breslow, and he was like, I'm going to keep those conversations private because it would make me look bad if I told you what we talked about. Like, I'm sure he's talked about requesting a trade. And I don't know, like, do you think anybody would have traded for him? Cause I know people said that on Twitter, and Lou Maloney was like, what are you talking about? Of course teams would trade for him. But like, I don't know. I don't know how many obviously it's a different situation than Masataki Yoshida, because we're talking about Rafael Devers, who when healthy is a top 15 to 20 player in the entire sport. But it's a similar thing. Like, how many teams have full-time DHs? How many teams are willing to pay him that contract with 9 years left at 30 mil a pop? If he's going to be a full-time DH, what kind of value do you get prospect wise for that? It's something that we really haven't seen ever since these mega deals have started coming out. I guess Stanton is the main one, and like Derek Jeter just did the Marlins, or did the Yankees a favor and gave them Stanton for like Starlin Castro and a bunch of shit bums. So like, I don't really know what the comp would be. Like, I find it hard to believe someone would be taking that contract for a guy who's more likely than not a full-time DH. Like, maybe there's a team that sees him as a first baseman. But again, like, Pete Alonso just sat out on the open market for how long before he took a team-friendly deal to go back to the Mets. So, like, I don't really know what the market is for first baseman either, let alone first basemen that are making 30 mil a year. Lou knows a whole lot more about baseball than me. He's a lot more plugged in than me. So I'm sure if he's saying that teams would have traded for him and given you something for him, then they would have. But like, I mean, obviously it's a good thing he didn't demand a trade. And I don't think it ever got to the point where he was like saying to Breslow, like, trade me, and Cora had to talk him off a ledge, because it would have leaked by then, because Devers would have been trying to get out of here. So he would have been like, yeah, I just demanded a trade. Get me the fuck out of here. So I'm glad that it kind of de-escalated. And ultimately, I think I said this when the news first came out and the whole controversy started. This is why Alex Cora is your manager. Like, he's one of the best player managers in the sport. He's one of the best managers, period, in the sport. And ultimately, he was able to handle this situation, figure it out. And Devers is going to be the DH. Bregman's going to be at third base. And Christian Campbell's going to be your opening day second baseman, which is what everybody thought all along. But Alex Cora was able to defuse the situation. And that's exactly why you make him one of the highest paid managers in the sport last year.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about it heading into the season. I think some people are. Me personally, it's like, if he really wanted a trade, then he would have started burning bridges. Like, a Marcus Stroman, who basically could not have made it clearer that he wanted to be traded because he refused to pitch in the bullpen, and then it worked itself out there too. So, I mean, obviously, it's a different tier of player, Marcus Stroman and Rafael Devers, but I think he's going to like being a DH. I think maybe he just has to see how it goes throughout the season. But even he's doing, like, you know, photo shoots for media. He looks fine. He looks happy. He's joking around with people in spring training. It's like, I think from the start, I knew it was overblown, but this just confirms it. And it's like, dude, they weren't going to trade you.
No, there was no scenario where Rafael Devers was traded this spring.
No. And I think he'll be fine. They're going to be winning games, and he'll be hitting nukes. I think it will be just fine seeing Alex Bregman make a ton of better plays out there than he ever could. So it'll sort itself out. Another thing, though, that I don't really love is Aroldis Chapman was named the closer for the for the start of the season. This, I think, will change once he starts walking the world. But yeah, he has looked okay in spring, pretty much end of spring.
Yeah, recently, he early in the season or early in the spring, he was walking the house and had a whole lot of command issues. I know last night he was touching 101 again. That's against a Mexican AA team, so I don't know what kind of stock you're going to put into a performance like that, but the velocity is there. I think if you were to look at the season or look at the team as a whole heading into the season, you say the one glaring hole is the bullpen. I think that they're We've talked about it before, but all offseason, it was like, all right, we need a starter. You go out and get Crochet. We need a right-handed bat that shores up the infield defense and can provide a spark behind Devers in the lineup. You go out and you get Alex Bregman. And after Alex Bregman signed, you're like, all right, cool. Like, what's next? We need that last reliever. Never came. You go into the spring with Liam Hendricks, Aroldis Chapman, and Justin Slayton battling it out for that closer role. Ultimately, Chapman comes out on top with a 2.45 ERA over 7 1/3 innings pitched, 14 strikeouts. He, like I said, he was walking the house. He walked six batters in his first, 2 1/3 innings of work in the spring. And then after that, he only walked one batter for the entire rest of the spring, which is encouraging to see. I can't help but feel like Justin Slayton got fucked here. And yeah. Ultimately, I think they're just going with the devil you know over the devil you don't. Like, you don't want to just trot Slayton out there on opening day when you have guys that you know can close before. And, like, ultimately, I think they wanted Liam Hendricks to win this job because they signed Chapman to be a lefty reliever. Now they're a lefty short in the bullpen if he's going to be closing out games for them. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how they plug that role. But, like, Liam Hendricks really just pissed away this opportunity this spring. And it sucks for him because obviously we know his story with the cancer and then obviously coming back and pitching like twice before he blows out his elbow. So it's a really unfortunate story, and the velocity just hasn't bounced back and the results haven't been there. Even when they kept trying to give him opportunities to take that job from Chapman, he just kept giving up loud, hard contact, even against some of the scrubs in some of these teams' lineups. So it sucks for him. Hopefully he can turn it around once the season starts. But I'm not feeling good about the bullpen. I think we might be in trouble with this bullpen, at least until June or even maybe as late as the deadline, where they were like, all right, we need to go out there and we need to add a legitimate reliever here.
Yeah, I don't disagree there. I do think starting with Chapman and maybe throwing it to Hendricks if Chapman doesn't pan out as the closer makes it easier for them to make Justin Slayton the closer later in the year and never give the job back. So I do think ultimately he will end up with the job. And we touched on that before during roster predictions that it seemed like they were going to go with one of the vets. That's what ended up happening. I think it is the worst of the two vets because Chapman, like you said, should be a lefty specialist. He should be that guy who you can call to in like the seventh, eighth inning. He can pump 100. And I know I mentioned before that I could deal with the heart attacks in the seventh or the eighth, but I don't want to deal with it in the ninth. And that's what we're trending towards. And this could be a moot point if he continues to pitch like he is in this second half of spring training. So I don't know, but I do agree that like a Ryan Helsley could become available. Some other bullpen guys, I'm sure, could, you know, teams underperforming or what have you. I think there is a means to improving the bullpen. And honestly, that's probably the easiest to improve during the season.
Also the most expensive.
True.
Well, aside from starters, but.
Yeah, but at this point, like, we know they're going to make a move to clear up this logjam. If it has to be a bona fide closer like a Helsley or someone else like that, I'm kind of okay with it. If everything else is firing on all cylinders, you want to put all your chips in this year, then that's the way to go, I think.
But even a guy like Helsley, who's a free agent at the end of the year, if you're giving up the assets for him and the contention window is open. It is It's wide open. Now you're going to have Campbell. His clock starts now, obviously 6 years of team control. Meyer and Anthony, that clock starts. You have Casas for 4 more years. You have Devers for 9. Obviously you locked up guys like Bayo, Rafaela. Hopefully they're going to work something out with Crochet, although I'm not holding my breath. Similar for a guy like Houck, who we'll get into it. He got fucking shelled this spring. He did not look very good, but we'll figure things out from there. Like the window's open. So if you're going out and you're trading for a guy like Ryan Helsley, I hope it's like a Craig Kimbrel situation where it's like, all right, we just went out, we traded for this guy. Now let's lock him up for foreseeable future. As we move forward, another guy, Robert Suarez, on the Padres come deadline season. Is there a trade for him and one of their starters, Cease or King, or the two that I mentioned? I'm partial to Michael King because he's a Boston College legend. But we'll have to see how things pan out. Like I said, I think the bullpen is easily the part of this roster I'm most concerned about going into the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's pretty easy to have them as the most concerning just because you don't really have a proven guy in there at all. You have some decent pieces. You have Garrett Whitlock and Justin Slayton, both who have shown flashes in the past. But aside from that, you got like Bernardino. And I was a little bit surprised that they didn't put either Adam Ottavino or Matt Moore on the roster. Neither of them had great springs, but you did have veteran guys who you have seen do it before, rather than just kicking it over to some of the young guns. And Luis Guerrero didn't make it either. So I don't know what they're doing with the bullpen.
Yeah, but they're considering Brian Mata. Like that's the one thing we still don't really know, how that last part of the bullpen is going to shake out. We know Matt Moore accepted his assignment to AAA, so he's going to be down there. Adam Ottavino was released, triggered his opt-out after not making the roster. So it's interesting what they're going to do. It seems like it's Zach Kelly, Brian Mata, Greg Weissert, and I forget who, Cooper Criswell, and like one or two other names fighting for those last two bullpen spots behind Chapman, Slayton, Whitlock, Hendricks, Slayton. Yeah, so what, two spots left after that? For one of those, or for two of those four or five guys that we mentioned. I would have liked to see Adam Ottavino make it. I just like him. I think it would have been cool to have a double zero on the team. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of impartial to him. He didn't light the world on fire in the spring by any means. But like you said, like I'd rather go with him, who we've seen do it at the major league level before, as opposed to Brian Mata, who like people want to talk about a forever prospect. We'll just talk to Brian Mata. Like, oh, Marcelo Meyer, is he a forever prospect? No, Brian Mata is a forever prospect.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, like, and even Mata the other day, he couldn't get out of the eighth inning against a bunch of the Rays scrubs. So I don't know. The bullpen worries me. I've said it like six times now just during this podcast, but and nothing's more annoying than having a team with a shaky bullpen, especially when we look at the rotation, we look at the offense. Like if they blow a bunch of games late in the like early part of the season, people's heads are going to be on absolute fire, being like, I told you they needed another reliever. I told you. Like, yeah, dude, anybody with a functioning brain could tell you that they needed another reliever. They didn't go out and get one. We'll see whether or not it bites them. Luckily, they have the ammo to go out and add one as it gets later into the season.
That's what makes it a little bit easier to digest heading into the season, where it's like, if shit does hit the fan, they can sort of remedy it.
Yeah, and David Robertson's still out there. Like, there are still some bullpen arms out there that if things aren't going the way that you hoped they would early, maybe you give one of those guys a deal and see what they can give you and then start to piece things together once you get closer to the deadline.
Right. But one other thing is Garrett Crochet and the team are pretty much all but set on not agreeing to an extension before opening day, which I think we both were kind of expecting as spring training went on and nothing really came out about them, the two sides getting closer to an extension. And ultimately it makes the most sense, I think. Like we've mentioned it before.
Or that him.
Right. But like he was always going to want to go into a full year and prove that he can, you know, sustain this workload, because the White Sox didn't really give him that chance last year. They shut him down towards the end of last season, and he wants to go out and prove it. I mean, this is a guy who's top five in odds for a Cy Young this year.
Number two.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a guy who can light the world on fire and could make a boatload of money if everything pans out like we're seeing in spring training now. So yeah, the price tag is going to go up for the Red Sox, but at this point, if he has the year we're expecting from him and nothing gets done next offseason, then I might be waving the white flag on him re-signing with the team at all.
Yeah, here's kind of where I fall on it. We have that Cotillo report that they are not even close. There's a pretty substantial gap in negotiations. And I understand Crochet's hesitancy. We talked about it on the last episode. If he pitches to his capabilities over these next 2 years, we're talking about a 27-year-old perennial Cy Young candidate hitting the open market. That's a guy that sets a record for highest contract for a pitcher ever. We're talking $350+ million over the course of 8 to 10 years.
Yep.
If there's a large gap here, I can't imagine that Crochet is being super unreasonable in saying, unless the number starts with a 2, I'm not interested in signing it. And I understand the Red Sox hesitancy in being like, well, you haven't done it over the course of a full season. Your workload was ramped down significantly at the end of the last year. You've already had Tommy John twice. I just don't, like, I don't understand. Like, it's not my money and it's not my organization. So it's easy for me to sit here in this chair and say, just give him $250 and call it a day, because at the end of the day, you're saving yourself $100 million potentially. But if the Red Sox are committed to seeing it for a year and then next offseason they're saying, all right, fine, here's $8 and $300 or whatever it would be, like, then fine. I would still say you should have done it last offseason for $220 to $250 or whatever the number that he's coming in at is, because then you have $100 million or so that you could have used elsewhere on the roster, like on a Ryan Helsley, like on another starter if you want to, like whatever you want to go and do it with. Like, you have that money to play with. But if they're like, it's hard to knock them if they're just like, all right, we're going to see it for a year. And if we have to pay an extra $100 million to get the deal done, then so be it. But I don't know. I would have just met him wherever he is, somewhere in the middle. Like, what are, like, for there to be a significant gap, what are the Red Sox coming in at? Like, 150?
That's where I'm at. That's where I'm thinking they're at. And I don't know. It seems different because we've seen them spend the money now recently, bringing in Alex Bregman. So it doesn't seem like they're afraid to, you know, lock up their guys. Obviously, on a lower level, they re-upped Sadon Rafaela and Brian Bayo, like you mentioned earlier. But it does worry me a bit that even if he does have a great year and the Red Sox are like, okay, yeah, we want to sign you to what you're worth now, part of me is like, is he just going to wait it out? I don't know. He seems like a guy who has enjoyed his time here so far. Obviously, it's been short, and that could change throughout the season for better or for worse. But it seems like he's in. Like, he's focusing on this season.
Yeah.
He's locked in. Pretty much all of the roster is super excited about where they could go this year. So I think if they make a deep playoff run, that only enhances the chances of them bringing him back. So I'm not fully out on this yet. It's just, it's going to be a storyline all season now that they haven't signed an extension yet. And next offseason, if it doesn't happen, then I am pretty worried.
Oh yeah. If it's not done next offseason, I'm fully pressing the panic button, because it's also, like you said, like, if he goes out there and wins the Cy Young this year, which, spoiler alert, once we get into the predictions, we both have him winning the Cy Young this year. So if he goes out there and wins the Cy Young this year, and then they go to him and they're like, all right, Garrett, we're ready. How about 275? And he's like, how about 370? It's going to be like, okay, like, well, like, why would he? He has no incentive to not wait for the open market at that point next offseason. So I kind of hope this is one of those things where, like, he's starting the All-Star game, and during that All-Star break, they're like, all right, Garrett, 275 over 8. What do you say? We've seen enough. And then, like, it's just one of those things that gets done. He's had half a year to acclimate to Boston, him and his wife, because Sam Kennedy in the booth kind of was like, yeah, well, like, him and his family need to figure out if this is a place where they want to be. And ultimately, they haven't been to Boston at all yet. Like, I'm sure that, like, his wife has been here and picked out a house, and, like, they know where they're living and whatnot, but he hasn't pitched at Fenway as a Red Sox, which, like, what's it? It's going to be next, or 2 Mondays from yesterday is going to be his Fenway debut or something like that. So, like, I mean, obviously that's going to be awesome. Like, I don't think he's sitting there going like, oh, I wonder what the fans are going to be like when I go out there and pitch. It's like, all right, well, it's going to be, it might be 20 degrees and pouring rain, and Fenway is going to be packed because it's Crochet Day and it's his Fenway debut. Like, I don't think that's going to be an issue, but, like, as far as living in the city, things like that, like, who knows how they're going to acclimate to that. I just hope it gets done during the season, and who knows what type of player he is, whether or not he's going to be like, all right, it's in season, I'm not negotiating at all. If, like, Xander Bogaerts, like what Vladdy did, but even Vladdy's kind of walked that back too. So, like, maybe if they, so like I said, if they by the All-Star break have seen enough and say, all right, we're willing to give you what you're looking for, like, let's just get this done. Like, that's what I'm hoping for at this point.
Yeah. One thing to add there is a couple weeks ago, I brought this up to Christian Arcand, And he was saying that Alex Cora did a similar thing heading into his last year before he signed the extension. He was like, I don't want to do extension talks during the year.
Yeah.
You know, I want to focus on the team and I don't want it to affect any of the day-to-day stuff. But if they put a good enough offer in front of his face and he doesn't have to think twice about it, then he'll sign. So,
right.
Yeah. So I do agree. I do like that line of thinking where it's like, if they're enough through the year and he's doing everything we think he's going to, and they bring him an offer that he can't refuse, then this could all sort itself out.
Right. Yeah. And what was it? That Rocky series. We got the Cora extension news.
Yeah.
So, this is a quick aside. The Netflix show that comes out on April 8th, we know that they weren't there for that Rocky series because they had budgetary issues. So we don't get the reaction to the clubhouse being like Cora being like, I'm not fucking leaving, which I would have loved to see, like, especially because we know how hard these guys play for Cora and how much Cora is admired and looked up to in this clubhouse. And obviously we don't get the, was it Cal Quantrill that told Bruce McGuire to go
jerk off
the parking lot? And then Nick Pavetta trying to fight him in the parking lot after the game, which I think would have been awesome to see. Just like Nick Pavetta ready to go to war for Reese McGuire, who would be DFA'd like 3 days later. Which also another quick aside. Fuck Cal Quantrill, dude. You're Cal Quantrill, like, telling Reese McGuire to go jerk off in a fucking parking lot. Like, who the fuck are you, buddy? You suck. Like, Cal Quantrill fucking blows. And he's in, not to say Reese McGuire is some world beater, but, like, again, who the fuck are you? You're Cal Quantrill.
It's also funny because this wasn't his first, like, dust up with the Red Sox. I know, like, something happened with him and Devers when he was on the Guardians.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what happened, but I know they were talking shit back and forth. But yeah, one other point we have before we get into the predictions is the rotation has been finalized. So Richard Fitz is the number four starter to start the year. And an interesting one here is Sean Newcomb is the five starter to begin the year for the Red Sox. How are you feeling about this, Zach? I know you had Priester to make the roster, but I mean, he kind of did have a tough end of the spring. So
yeah. And I think part of it is roster flexibility. We know so much about how they break camp is all about using options and optimizing their way to have bring the best roster possible and also maintain that depth. I don't know what Newcomb's contract was. I can't imagine he was on a major league deal, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was a non-roster invitee that came in with a opt-out if he didn't make the team. So ultimately, I think it was just about, all right, let's put Sean Newcomb on this roster, give him the fifth starter spot. He definitely earned it over Priester over these last couple weeks of the spring. We know Priester got rocked in one of his last starts. So it's one of those things where Priester has options. Newcomb maybe has an opt-out and can go down. Like, ultimately, it's a really good story. It's a cool story for Sean Newcomb, who grew up in Brockton, and he's going to end up starting that Sunday game against the Cardinals for his Fenway Park debut. So he kind of gets to live out a childhood dream. And ultimately, I know Ed Hand tweeted this, that he's destined to assume the Chase Anderson human white flag / human victory cigar role, which it seems like Cooper Criswell is going to be in for right now. But Cooper Criswell just doesn't do it for me at all. Like, I know he's another guy who has an option. So ultimately he's a guy that's probably going to get sent back down at some point, and they play something ridiculous, like 26 games in the first 28 days of the season. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be relying pretty heavily on that depth, specifically in the bullpen. So I think we probably see a lot of moving parts there, like Criswell going down after he gets burnt for a couple innings in a blowout, and then seeing like Luis Guerrero come back up, or even Brian Mata get some burn, or Zach Kelly, whichever one of those guys doesn't win those final couple spots in the bullpen. But I'm excited for Sean Newcomb because he was a guy that when he was a prospect coming up with the Braves, I kind of liked. I just kind of picked random back in those days. I just kind of picked random prospects that I was like, oh, I kind of like that guy. And he was one of those guys. Obviously, things haven't panned out. So, and it, like I said, it's a cool story. You always like to see local guys come up and play for the Red Sox, fulfill some childhood dreams. And I know the Bruins do this all the time. If you are from the greater Massachusetts area, you will get 20 minutes a night playing for the Boston Bruins, even if you're the least productive player in the history of the earth, like Oliver Wahlstrom was.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. I was blanking on his name. So thanks for bringing him up. But yeah, I don't have much to add on the Newcomb ends. I think it is a cool story. He had a really good spring. So, I mean, we'll see. I know it's kind of like, yeah, he's a DFA or a Chase Anderson candidate once the depth is off the IL. But for now, let's see what he's got. I mean, this was a pretty highly regarded prospect at one point, and obviously it never came together for him. But it is a cool story, and I'm totally okay with it for the first couple weeks of the season until a Bayo, a Giolito, a Crawford come back. But yeah, if you don't have anything else, we could get into...
Bayo, it seems like he's already worked his way up to like 4 or 5 innings on the side fields down at Fort Myers. So it seems like he's only going to be a couple weeks. So maybe he only misses a start or two. So we're only talking about like at most 3 or 4 trips around the rotation until Bayo's back. Crawford, it seems like, is going to take a little longer. And who really knows with Giolito, but it seems like one of those things where we're going to see Sean Newcomb for a little bit, and then you figure some things out where whether or not he's just straight up DFA'd or he goes into that Chase Anderson human victory cigar role.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's good to have the pitching depth because like we saw, the Yankees are kind of already bursting at the seams at this point with Luis Gil going down, Gerrit Cole going down, now Clark Schmidt as well. So I don't know what they're going to do, but it feels good to at least be okay with who they're trotting out there every fifth day, even if it's not going to be the ultimate, you know, end game roster to start the year.
Right. And think about in years past, we were touting the depth at the beginning of spring training and be like, all right, this is the deepest this staff has been in years.
Yeah. If
this was last year and we had Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford, and Lucas Giolito all go down in the span of 3 weeks, we'd be pressing the panic button.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And now you have that depth, and like, sure, it's going to be tested in this early part of the season. But again, like I said, it doesn't seem like Bayo's too far behind at this point. So he should be joining the rotation within the first month of the season. And then you still have Quinn Priester in AAA. So you haven't even fully dipped into that depth that like to the fullest potential. And I would say that Priester probably has the highest ceiling out of anyone in that depth group.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure. I mean, Cooper Criswell, we know what he is at this point, and it's like...
He's whatever. He is the very definition of just a Jag.
Mm-hmm. Like, I would...
KJ and Lyons.
Shout out KJ and Lyons, yeah. But yeah, I would much rather see Priester if anything else were to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, the season predictions now. So this is probably the meat and potatoes of the episode, even though we've done 47 minutes so far. But yeah, I'll let you take the lead on this, and I can just kind of jump in.
Alrighty, how do we want to go? We want to just rattle off everything and then discuss, or just go one at a time?
I feel like some of these we could just rattle off. Maybe we just go in order and then just kind of unpack it as we go if there's anything.
Alrighty, I'll start off with my record prediction. I have them going 94-68, finishing first in the AL East. I don't see any threats in the AL East, to be honest with you. I have been beating the drum that the Yankees are not that fucking good for 2 years now. Last year, they were a two-person lineup with Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, and that was it.
Yep.
And they went to the World Series. I know, and everyone's going to be like, oh, how can you say that they're not that good if they went to the World Series? It's like, okay, well, the AL was historically bad last year. The AL is still historically bad. And now you're talking about a Yankees team who is, like we said, no Gerrit Cole for the entire season. Who knows what's going on with Luis Gil with that shoulder inflammation? Now Clark Schmidt is down. We're talking about Carlos Rodon being their number two starter. Max Fried is a really good pitcher. I would have loved it if he was on the Red Sox. He's not. He's on the Yankees. Great pitcher. Great number one for them to have. Carlos Rodon sucks. Marcus Stroman sucks. Who is their 4 and 5 starter? Like
Carlos Carrasco is one of them.
Okay, so we're talking about Carlos Carrasco, who is 45 years old and hasn't been good since, what, like 2016, 2017 at this point? So Carlos Carrasco is their 4 starter. Sure, they go out and they get Devin Williams. They have Luke Weaver. They have pieces in the bullpen. it doesn't matter what you have in the bullpen. And you could have fucking Mariano Rivera coming out of retirement to close out games. If you don't have a lead in those games, it doesn't matter who's coming out of the bullpen. And their lineup is bad. They replaced Anthony Rizzo, who is also washed, with a washed Paul Goldschmidt. You replace Juan Soto with Cody Bellinger, who sure, maybe he gets a power bump in the with the short porch out there in right field, but the Cubs couldn't wait to get rid of Cody Bellinger all offseason. So like you're kind of banking on Bellinger having a sort of revival year. And I just maybe, like I said, maybe he gets a power bump, but ultimately I don't really see it for him there. Anthony Volpe, I think you kind of know what he is at this point. He's a whatever bat, like a league average bat with gold glove defense. Their third baseman is, I don't even know who. I've seen so many Yankee fans, like, shout out the reasonable Yankee fans that are like, oh my God, like, who the fuck are we trotting out here at third base? Like, this is a catastrophe. Like, the evil empire, the days of the evil empire are dead. George Steinbrenner is rolling over in his grave looking at this lineup right now. If you thought the lineup last year was bad, like I said, it was a two-person lineup, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. If you could work your way around those two guys, no one else in that lineup was going to hurt you. So that's just my tangent on the Yankees. I have always been on the Baltimore Orioles or frauds train for 3 years now. You can go back and 2 years ago, someone tweeted, like, what's your hot take for the Major League Baseball season? And this was, like, July. And I was like, I cannot wait for the Orioles to be exposed for the frauds that they are come playoff time. And they got swept by the Texas Rangers in the first round last year. They got worse. Like we said, with Corbin Burnes, Arizona Diamondback. They were like, all right, we're going to hand the keys over to Grayson Rodriguez. His elbow is already barking. So he's a Tommy John waiting to happen at this point. Their big addition in the was Charlie Morton and Tomiyoku Sugano, who has become a meme in my Dynasty Baseball League. He doesn't scare me at the major league level. This is a guy who, like, sure, he has the Shota Imanaga, like, similar thing where he's not going to miss a lot of bats and he knows how to pitch. But I think Imanaga had a top 5-10 percentile outcome last year out of his profile. So I'm not banking on the Orioles striking gold there. Adley, we know what they have in Adley. Gunner is going to start the year on the IL, but we know what they have in him. Tyler O'Neill, they moved the fence in for him. So like I think their offense is going to be good, but like ultimately pitching wins you baseball games, and the Orioles got significantly worse in their rotation and losing Corbin Burnes. The Blue Jays are whatever. The Rays, they always find a way to be good, but I don't really see them as even remotely a threat, especially now with Shane McClanahan with this tricep issue. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a whole big thing for him, but it's never good when you have a guy coming back from Tommy John who immediately has a tricep injury flare up. So and the Red Sox are still, they've jumped the Orioles now. They're plus 260 to win the division, which I got them they signed Bregman. I got them at plus 450. So WCLV on that one. But I don't see a world where the Red Sox shouldn't be favored to win the AL East.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I mean, not too much to add. I put them at 95 and 67. That's what the Yankees finished with last year. And they won the AL East. It might not even take that many wins. I'm not going to lie. I'm not super high on the Yankees or the Orioles. And we know what the Blue Jays and Rays are at this point. I'm not scared of them. That's really all I got there. I think we will probably see at least two wildcard teams from the AL East. So whether the Red Sox win it or not, I do think they'll make the playoffs regardless.
Yeah. I think they're minus 170 at this point to make the playoffs, which at one point they were minus 105 a couple weeks ago, and I should have taken it then, but I was waiting to place all my futures until this week. So unfortunately I missed the boat on that. But like at this point, I think the playoffs is the like absolute floor of this team. And even not winning a round in the playoffs, I would say is a disappointment at this point.
Yep. I'm with you there.
All righty. Do we want to move on to our season MVP at this point?
Yeah. So you haven't, we both have kind of standard ones. I'll just say mine first because I want to get this take off real fast. Jaren Duran. I am very high on Jaren Duran. I have been for a while now. I mean, he really panned out last year, but the year before he kind of was putting it all together. And at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm all in on him. He had an all-star MVP season last year. And I think the lineup, LaCora has mentioned this before, the lineup really goes with Jaren Duran. He's your leadoff guy, and you really need him to maybe not replicate his season from last year, because that's really tough to do. But if he's even close to a season from last year, then I think this team is a lot better than anything else. And I'm very high on him. I think he's going to continue this trajectory, and we could be looking at some MVP votes from him. I think he got some last year, but I'm even more locked in on him.
Yeah, I think
this
he finished seventh.
That's all I got on him. Yeah.
Yeah. I have Rafael Devers. Again, you mentioned it, pretty chalky picks out of both of us for the season MVP. But when you look at things, we know what happened with the shoulder injury at the end of the year, and that injury was sustained. Well, we know he came into spring training with the shoulders barking a little bit, but it only got worse when he was diving around in the field at third base, playing subpar third base, and ultimately his season got shut down as a result of that. But when you look at his first half of the season, as my baseball reference loads the stats, he hit .291 with a .374 OBP, .592 slugging, good for a .965 OPS. And in that time, he hit 23 home runs, 18 doubles, and drove in 61 runs. He was on pace for a career year. That would have been a career year in a top five MVP finish for Rafael Devers. Now he's moving to full-time DH, or mostly full-time DH, with the addition of Alex Bregman. I don't think they're just going to completely remove him from third base. If we're talking in fantasy baseball eligibility purposes, I think he's going to maintain eligibility into next season, which I think is 20 games at the position. So not that many, but now that he's able to just focus solely on hitting, he should maintain health throughout the entire course of the season. And if we're using that track record of last year, we know what Rafael Devers is, and this is a guy that I'm going to sprinkle some money on to win MVP. Like, we're going to get into it. He's not my pick to win it, but I think he has as good of a chance as any, because like I said, those numbers last year, .291 with a .965 OPS with 23 home runs up until the All-Star break, so it's 84 games, a little over half a season. I don't see how he isn't this, like, he's this team's best player. And sure, I think eventually, like, spoiler alert, I think Roman Anthony's going to be this team's best player in 2 years, because I think he's going to be an absolute stud, a perennial MVP candidate at his highest ceiling. So, but right now it's Rafael Devers, and ultimately this team is going to go how Rafael Devers goes. He's their best hitter, he's their best player, and the offense is going to run through him.
Yeah, I like the take. It's funny that I have both Devers and Duran in my fantasy lineup. They might have been the only two Red Sox I drafted, but I am expecting big years from both of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I missed out on both of those guys. We actually added a couple more Red Sox fans to my fantasy league this year. So yeah, I was competing with them. One guy has Duran and Devers. The only guy, well, I have Campbell, and I also have Tristan Casas, who we'll get into to that guy with our next one, our breakout candidate of the year. And this is the chalkiest breakout candidate of the year ever, because everybody is on Tristan Casas. But if you know anything about me, you know that I am number one Tristan Casas fan. And I have said this over and over and over again: the more you people hate him, the more I love him. I have enough love in my heart for Tristan Casas for all of you people to hate him. And, oh, but he paints his fingernails and he goes out in the outfield and does yoga naked. Like, don't care. Don't care. Do not give a fuck. And neither are you when he goes out there and hits 35 home runs this year with a 870 plus OPS. Like, that's the type of player that we're talking about here. And I know it's chalky to say that this is the breakout candidate, but it all relies on health for Tristan Casas. And I think this is the year he finally puts it all together. He stays healthy. No fluky rib injuries. No getting stabbed every time he swings a bat. None of that bullshit. Just going out there and fucking raking. And that's exactly what he's going to do. And like I said, I know it's a chalky breakout candidate, but I'm the Tristan Casas guy, and I always will be. And then I did a pitcher as well. I think it's going to be Brian Baio. Similarly to being the Tristan Casas guy, I am the Brian Baio guy. I am a Brian Baio believer at my very core, and all you people that want to hate him and talk shit about him and bitch about the extension, which, like, bitching about a like $60 million extension when you're the Boston Red Sox is so bizarre to me. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, that's pennies compared to what other teams are giving their guys. And like, it, again, you're the Boston Red Sox. We're talking about giving Garrett Crochet $370 million in a couple years. So like, what are we doing here? But similar story for Baio. I think last year there was a whole lot of pressure put on him being the opening day starter with the contract extension. We know the Pedro comparisons, and he wasn't great. He really didn't live up to the hype for the first part of the year. But in the second half of last year, kind of the opposite of what Devers had, he finally figured out how to pitch a little bit better and pitch more to his arsenal. We know the swing and miss stuff isn't always going to be there. He's more of a pitch to contact guy, and now he's able to do that a little bit more with the improved infield defense, specifically with Bregman at third and Campbell. It's been a little bit rocky at the start of spring training defensively, but I think he's made pretty major strides there. And again, I'll defer to Lou Maloney, who played the sport, knows more about baseball and how it works than I have in my pinky finger, and knows the intricacies of the league, again, more better than I do. And he's also said that he thinks Campbell's made massive strides defensively at second base throughout the spring. So I think Baio's going to be able to pitch to his style and pitch to the way that he can a little bit better this year with that improved defense, not trying to miss as many bats. And also, like I said, a lot of pressure with him coming in as the de facto ace last year, opening day starter. Now you have a bunch of guys in front of him. You have Crochet in front of him. You have Buehler in front of him. You have Houck in front of him. So less pressure on him. Hopefully the Pedro comparisons stop, because those were always ridiculous. Like, especially when we talk about the bat missing ability of Pedro compared to Brian Baio, like the similarities between Pedro and Brian Baio begin and end with they're both Dominican and undersized.
Yep. Yep. I like both of those takes. If Zach is the number one guy in the Tristan Casas fan club, I would say I'm number two. I am all in on him this year. I think he's going to be a breakout guy, and he's going to shut a lot of people up this year, which we've mentioned in the past. The other guy I have is Richard Fitz, because he's now the fourth guy in the rotation right now, and he has shown a ton in spring training and in his albeit limited innings last year. He came up in September and he was really good. And at this point, I'm just thinking that I would rather see him out there than a Cutter Crawford and maybe a Lucas Giolito if he can't figure out the homer problem. Obviously, you're going to put those guys in before him. But if anything else happens, or if maybe we're looking at more of an extended absence for any of those guys, I think Richard Fitz will be able to hold down the fort. And by next season, I don't think it's going to be even a question of whether or not Richard Fitz will be making the rotation. I think he's going to solidify his case this year. I'm pretty high on him. And it's a pretty great return for an Alex Verdugo, who just signed with the Atlanta Braves after he was... After, I don't know where this story came from, but everyone was like, why doesn't he have a job? He was so good last year. Like,
that is peak. No. It's the middle of spring training. We have nothing to talk about. So, oh, yeah. Alex Verdugo's still a free agent. And he's going to start the year in the minors because he signed so late. But, like,
yeah.
Was it John Boy that tweeted, like we got Alex Verdugo for free. All we gave up was Greg Weissert and Richard Fitz, who sucks.
Yep.
Okay, now what do you guys have? You don't have anything. Like, oh, we got Luke Weaver. Like, we signed him, whatever. But the big thing with Fitz is I think the velocity jump. He's touching 96, 97 somewhat consistently. I know it's kind of been up and down from start to start, but like if he can find that velocity through five innings, because that's all it takes now, especially out of your four starter to just five and dive consistent velocity, I think he can be a pretty valuable piece here. And I'm kind of hoping that he just takes command of that fourth rotation spot. I know we're kind of Cutter Crawford haters on this pod, a little bit, but I think that this is going to be his job to lose, and we'll see whether or not Cutter actually comes back in this season or where things stand with that injury. It seemed like surgery was on the table for him, if not likely. So we'll see what happens there. It seems like he's going to be out at least until June and July. So we'll see what the rotation looks like by then. We harp on it time and time again. These things usually sort themselves out, but we'll see. It's one of those things like Cutter, I'm pretty surprised, is still here. Same with Willie or Abreu. It seems like those two guys were in every single hypothetical trade package all off season. So who knows? We've talked about it with Cutter Crawford with the home run issue and how that doesn't really play at Fenway Park in the short or long term. So we'll see how things play out, but I'm with you there on Richard Fitz.
Yeah. I like the Bayo take too, but I wanted to pick a pitcher that maybe people don't have a ton of eyes on right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. So next one that we have here is our rookie of the year. Ironically enough, neither of us picked Christian Campbell, who's the only one starting on the opening day roster. And part of me, and again, spoiler alert, I have Christian Campbell winning Rookie of the Year. But I have Marcelo Meyer. And ultimately, I think it comes down to Trevor Story. I'm not going to bank on Trevor Story staying healthy throughout the course of the season. He's done nothing in his Red Sox tenure that has proven to me that he's going to do that. And we already know that his back is barking. It seems like one of those things where it's like, all right, well, it's spring training and your back is tight. So like, we're not going to put you out there. And like, if this was happening in September or October, he'd be out there. But again, we've seen the flukiest injuries of all time with Trevor Story, from getting injured and missing the entire season on a dive last year. And we saw how the infield defense fell apart. And I like David Hamilton. We saw him at shortstop last year. He had to crow hop to get the ball to first base from shortstop. So we know how the defense fell apart. We know how that type of injury impacted the lineup. And it seems like Meyer, it doesn't matter if it's Bregman, Campbell, or Story, he's going to be the first infielder up when an injury occurs. So ultimately, I think, like I said, I think it's going to be Story that gets hurt. And having an actual stopgap there for that, not just being like, David Hamilton, you think he can maybe play shortstop? Probably not, but we don't really have a choice. We have an actual major league caliber shortstop, and again, one of the top 15 prospects in the entire sport by most major media outlets. So I think once Story goes down and Meyer comes up, it's going to be super valuable to just have that continuity of having an actual major league shortstop at the position. So Campbell might have better numbers. We'll see. And like I said, I have Christian Campbell winning Rookie of the Year mostly because he's starting the year on the major league roster. So that gives him a leg up on some of these other guys. But I think as far as rookie who's the most valuable to the Red Sox, it's going to be Marcelo Meyer when Story inevitably gets hurt.
Yeah, I think that's a great take. I'm going to stick with mine of Roman Anthony just because this guy has been the most hyped prospect for the Red Sox pretty much since I've been following the team. I mean, this guy is my number one prospect in the sport. I'm tired of hearing that Roki Sasaki is a prospect.
Doesn't even count. Yeah, Roki does not count.
Yeah. So where I'm at with Roman Anthony is I think this team is so much better if Roman Anthony is your everyday left fielder, Jaron Duran is either in center or right, and Willier Abreu, it will probably be Duran in center and Willier in right. Mm-hmm. And then you have Rafaela as your super utility guy who can give anyone in the outfield a day off or either of your middle infield spots a day off. I think that is the best version of this team. And I think they're going to realize that sooner rather than later. And they're going to get Roman Anthony up here after he's probably tearing the cover off the ball in AAA. And if everybody is wrong on Roman Anthony, I would be shocked. I think he's the type of player who, when he gets called up, he's going to make the most of his opportunity right from the jump. And I think he's going to be up less than halfway through the season, and he's just going to run away with it after that point. So I like the Marcelo Meyer take a lot. And I do think Christian Campbell deserves some love here because obviously he's the one who's on the team right now. And he did have a rough spring, but he's going to bring some consistency to the second base spot that we haven't had in forever. And I think he's going to have a good year too. But I mean, you can't go wrong with any of these guys.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, okay, which one of these absolute fucking studs do we think is going to be rookie of the year? You can make an argument for any of the three. And I said it earlier, I think Roman Anthony's going to be a perennial MVP candidate in this league. I think he's that good of a player. So you can't go wrong with picking any of the three. And I do like that both of us went outside of the box and weren't just like, oh, Christian Campbell. And like, I know, let me see if you have him winning rookie of the year. Oh, you don't. You have Anthony there. So, yeah. So I do have him winning Rookie of the Year. I'm going to have money on all three of them to win Rookie of the Year. Just because I think that's fun. But you want to jump ahead to biggest disappointment because you mentioned my name there?
Sure.
So I've said on Rafaela as the biggest disappointment, and it kind of goes, like I said, hand in hand with yours. I think eventually Roman Anthony is going to force their hands down at the AAA level and just be continuing to tear the cover off the ball with absolutely ridiculous exit velocities. I want to say that he would have finished top 20 in average exit velo among major league players last year. Mm. Obviously, different competition, but how hard you hit the ball is how hard you hit the ball. It doesn't really matter what kind of competition you're facing. Like, right. Your exit velos are the one thing that can kind of move from level to level and still maintain relative consistency. I always found it weird that they just kind of, like, when there was so much uncertainty around this starting lineup, it seemed like they had Seidon Rafaela just written in Sharpie in center field from the day that they got to spring training. And he changed his hands. He changed his load. And it is hopefully going to lead to less swing and misses. I don't know how much a change in your hands and a change in your load and all that stuff. Pause on the change. In your load. I don't know how much that stuff is going to translate to swing decisions. Like, we saw some really pitiful swing decisions out of Seidon Rafaela. I forget what the number is. He didn't walk for ages last year. He's not a guy that walks a whole lot. And I understand he's a really elite defensive player, specifically in center field, but I think that guy is more valuable, I agree with you, in the super utility role. And eventually, if those swing decisions don't get better and he's still striking out at a 30%+ clip and he's not walking hardly at all, like, I'll pull up the Savant page right now, but I would be shocked if Seidon Rafaela was anything higher than 5th percentile walk rate last year. And even that would shock me. I was going to say I'd be surprised if he's not 1st percentile walk rate at this point. So I just don't see it with Rafaela. I have never seen it with Rafaela. A lot of people were coming with Mookie comps for him when he was first coming up, which I thought was always insane. Similar to how the similarities between Brian Bayo and Pedro Martinez begin and end with, they're both undersized and Dominican. The similarities between Mookie Betts and Seidon Rafaela begin and end with, they're undersized. Like, that's it. And they both play gold glove caliber defense. And when Rafaela was coming up, his swing kind of looked like Mookie's. Like, I won't even say it really looked like Mookie's. Like, it was just one of those things that I never saw and I haven't seen with Rafaela really since he's been a prospect. So ultimately, I think Anthony takes that job. And I know you said like halfway through the season. I think it could be as soon as like May 1st.
Yeah, I don't hate the take. I'm going to push back on it a little bit just because looking at his spring training stats and kind of the conversation I've been hearing about him throughout spring training is that his swing decisions have gotten a hell of a lot better. And obviously it is spring training, so it's, you have to see it in the regular season. Yeah. But compared to last year, he's only struck out 4 times this year in 16 games. Last year he struck out 13 times in 23 games. So you do see the improvement there. He was also hitting .316 on the spring. So I am a little bit higher on Rafaela than you, but I don't hate the take. Like, I think, like I said, his best spot is a super utility role. And I don't see him as an everyday player, but a guy like that who you can have just give anyone a day off is a really good thing to have. Like we saw with Brock Holt in 2018, that's basically what he did. And I think Rafaela could be a better version of Brock Holt.
I was right. I pulled up the Savant page. He was 1st percentile walk rate last year, 2.6%. Okay. But I do want to push back against the spring training stats. And obviously, it's just narrative ball with spring training. We've been over that time and time again. it doesn't fit my narrative, so I'm going to push back. His opponent quality, which shout out Milliken for pointing this out on Baseball Reference, is a 7.3, which when you click into the glossary on there, varies from 1 being rookie ball to 10 full-time major leaguer based on the levels their opponents played at in the previous seasons. He's sitting at a 7.3, which is double A. So Like, this is what I'm expecting out of, say, Don Raffaello, who has a year under his belt in the major leagues against essentially double A caliber talent. And that's not to say that I wouldn't be shocked if, like, again, these are Alex Cora and however many people that know way more about baseball than me, first of all, and number two, have been seeing it firsthand down there. I've seen the games that they've televised. So I haven't seen it firsthand. I'm going to go with his entire career history up until this point, where I'm going to have to see it to believe it with Raffaello.
Yeah. No, I don't hate the take. I didn't know about that. That was even a stat, to be honest, about the, opponent qualities, but that is interesting that, so maybe, I mean, yeah, it could be a moot point. I really don't know. But I have Tanner Houck as my biggest disappointment because, damn, his spring has been really, really bad. But I will say, this is not a guy that the Red Sox need to lean on nearly as much as last year. So if he's your two starter and he's given you, like, you know, a 3.75 to a 4 ERA, and he's, you know, maybe comes back down to earth a little bit from last year, but is still serviceable, that's fine to me. I just think he's coming into this year with a ton of expectations. He was an all-star last year. He was easily your best pitcher throughout the year. And yeah, I think a lot of pitchers last year for the Red Sox, the wheels ended up falling off towards the end of the year. But this was a guy who I was pretty high on coming into spring training and 2025 as a whole. And he hasn't shown me much at all at this point. And no, that could change. Rocked. Yeah, that could change. I did like him a lot last year. I also kind of liked him in a reliever role. Now, I mean, that's pretty much out the door given the year he's had last year. But yeah, I thank God they got Buehler and Crochet, because if you were heading into this year with Houck as your opening day starter after the spring he had, then this outlook would be looking a lot different.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And with what he has, he gave up like 13 hits to the Rays the other day.
Absolutely.
They pulled him and then trotted him back out there the next day, and he continued to get shelled. Again, it's spring training, so you can pick and choose what matters and what doesn't, but certainly not encouraging. And I think the biggest thing for him is he's not missing any bats. There's just no strikeouts. I think he had 3 over the course of the entire spring. So obviously not ideal. Best thing you can say about Tanner Houck is that he starts at 0-0-0s across the board going into the regular season. He's going to be the number 2 starter on Friday in Texas that we're going to get into, which we can cover quickly at the end of the pod. But I obviously not an encouraging start to the season for Tanner Houck.
Yeah. I don't have much more to add. I hope to be proven wrong. But at this point, it's not looking great for his season outlook.
Yeah. Moving on to the next one, I think we can just go through this one pretty quickly. Cy Young of the year, Garrett Crochet.
Yep, me as well.
Yeah. We both have him winning the AL Cy Young this year. He is the second lowest odds behind Tarek Skubal, who is the reigning Cy Young winner for the Tigers. He is heavily juiced to the over 199.5 strikeouts on the year. It's -132 on DraftKings. I mean, we talked about it on the last episode. This is the guy we've been looking for since prime Chris Sale, and we finally have him, and hopefully they can lock him up.
Yep. Not much more to add there either. I think he's going to win the Cy Young, and he's going to make a fuckload of money.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Relief man of the year. Who do you got there?
So I went with Garrett Whitlock because I think this is the year for him. This is kind of the make or break year for him because they tried the whole Daniel Bard experience with him, trying to make him a starter. It didn't work out. He had a bunch of injuries throughout the last couple of years, but we're not that far removed from him being your best reliever in 2021. Mm-hmm. So putting him back in that role, I am super high on him. He looked very good in spring, and yeah, I just like him. I think he's not going to end up being the closer, but you're going to need a mop-up guy, or you're going to need a guy who can slam the door when your bullpen's taxed at some point. I think he's going to be a really big piece of this team. And if the bullpen is going to be good, I think that starts with Whitlock and the guy you're about to mention.
Yeah, so just quickly on Whitlock before I get to mine, I think that last point that you made is really what's going to make Whitlock so valuable. And we know in 21 that he was the most valuable piece in that bullpen because he was able to give you multiple innings. So now if you're going into a game where I mentioned it earlier, you play however many games, 26 games in 28 days to start the season, that bullpen's going to be taxed at some point. You can't expect perfect starts or five innings, six innings out of your starters in every single one of those starts. So the ability to have Whitlock in there to lengthen the bullpen and give you three innings if you need to, along with the ability to save, like, he's not going to be the Chase Anderson human victory cigar or human white flag. Yeah. He's not going to go out there for four innings in a blowout, but say you used Chapman two or three days in a row and Hendricks is continuing his spring and you use Slayton however many days in a row, it's like, all right, we're in the seventh inning with a lead. Whit, go out there and give us three innings and close this one out. Yeah. So I think there is going to be save potential there for that, because I know if you get three innings at the end of a game, you get a save no matter what the score is. But to be able to lengthen the bullpen, or even like I mentioned, you can't expect your starters to be perfect in every game or and give you five, six innings. So like, say you have a starter that only gives you three or four, a lot of traffic, not a lot of runs, you're still right in there. It's like, all right, we're right in this game. It's 1-0, 2-0 in the fourth inning, but our starter had too many pitches, too much traffic, what have you. Whitlock, go out there, give us 4, 5, 6 and bridge the gap to the rest of the bullpen. Then we can piece it together from there once we get to the sixth, seventh inning, depending on the score. I have Justin Slayton. Big surprise. I've been beating the Justin Slayton drum all spring training. I think eventually he's going to take over that closer role if they don't trade for somebody. And once he takes hold of it, I don't think he's ever going to let go of it. It's going to be similar to Arcand used this example the other day, but Koji situation where it's like, all right, we tried Joel Hanrahan, we tried Andrew Bailey. I think Andrew Bailey's arm exploded and Joel Hanrahan sucked. And then Koji eventually took command of that closer role and had the best season for a closer in Reds and maybe in Red Sox history in 2013 there. I mean, he was just completely unhittable that year. So it, maybe Slayton doesn't have the best season for a closer in Red Sox history, but I think he is eventually going to assume that closer role and be really good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the take. I'm a Whitlock fanboy, so that's why I leaned towards him, but I like the Slayton take a lot. And I'm expecting a big year from both of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I don't think either of us could have gone wrong with either of those picks.
Yeah, yeah. So the last one we have is a playoff finish, if you wanted to start off.
Last one we have. I have them losing in the World Series to the Dodgers. I talked about it earlier in this episode. I just don't see it with the AL. Like, I didn't see it last year. I mean, the Yankees with two good players on offense went to the World Series last year. I do think we're going to get into it. I see a resurgence here for the Rangers. I think they're the biggest threat to the Red Sox in the American League right now. So I think that's going to be the ALCS matchup, depending on how things shake out. And ultimately, it's probably going to come down to health of the starting rotation. Like, we know they have DeGrom, but like, what does that look like? They've already had a lot of injuries in their rotation. We're going to talk about their rotation once we get to this preview, once we wrap up here. But I don't see there being any reason why the ALCS shouldn't be, maybe not the floor, because that's a pretty lofty expectation for a team, but I think they should reasonably be in the ALCS. And then maybe if you flip a coin between them and the Rangers, who's rolling right at that time, I think it's going to be one of them. But then, like, I don't know. It's so hard to pick against the Dodgers in any type of World Series. And we've never seen a Red Sox team lose a World Series in our lifetimes. It would probably kill me if they did. but it's just so hard to pick against that team. I mean, they have the best rotation in baseball. They have the best lineup in baseball. They have the best bullpen in baseball. They're just the Dodgers are top to bottom, the best team in baseball. So it's hard to see them not going back to back, but it's baseball. So there's 162 games to be played and however many playoff games before we get there, who knows what happens injury wise and what have you. I know Mookie's down like 40 pounds or whatever. Yeah. He's down to 157. He said from that like mystery illness that he has, like, obviously I don't think that's something that's going to linger throughout the entire season, but weird things happen. But I have them losing the World Series to the Dodgers.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you said it's tough to pick against the Dodgers. I have the Red Sox losing in the World Series to the Mets, and maybe I can get into it more later, but just real quick, the Mets were, I think, two wins away from the World Series last year against the Dodgers. and they added Juan Soto, and they have Kodai Senga coming back. He wasn't really a big factor at all for them last year. I'm pretty high on the Mets, and yeah, I mean, like you said, the AL is wide open, and I'm really not concerned about many teams in the American League. I don't know how many teams have a better lineup in baseball than the Red Sox. So it's not a bad pick. I know it's a homer pick from both of us, but I've seen a lot of other people having the Red Sox winning the AL or ranked higher than I would have expected national baseball reporters to rank them. So it's not out of the question. I think, yeah, maybe we could be considered a little bit homerish, but I mean, look at the rest of the American League and tell me that there's a better team than the Red Sox.
It's the Rangers, and that's it, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have just as many question marks as, well, maybe more question marks than the Red Sox. When you look at DeGrom, can he stay healthy? They're already having the rest of their rotation in shambles, and Cody Bradford was supposed to be in their rotation. He's hurt.
Yeah.
Tyler Molly, he got hurt, but he was hurt, but he's going to start the second or third game against the Red Sox this week. I'm really high on Kumar Rocker. Jack Leiter hasn't shown anything at the big league level. We'll see if Evaldi can stay healthy. He has the last couple years, but we know his injury history. Obviously, Semien and Corey Seager. Seager has been a question mark injury-wise. And who knows what happens with Wyatt Langford, Evan Carter, some of those guys. But if it's my one hesitation with the Mets is their rotation. I know Kodai Senga didn't play that big of a factor last year for them, and I think he's really good. But behind him, it's Sean Manaea, Frankie Montas, or like
David, what is the Peterson. Rest of
it? Yeah, like their rotation really doesn't scare me. Obviously, their lineup with Lindor, Pete Alonso, Juan Soto, Mark Vientos was great for them down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
That's going to be really dangerous, but I think ultimately that's a matchup where if that's what they draw, I think they're winning the World Series.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fair point. Maybe I could have switched it to a World Series win against the Mets, but ultimately I landed on, I don't know if the Red Sox are there yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's fair.
They will be very soon.
Yeah. It's definitely homer picks from both of us, like you said. We're already at an hour and a half almost. Do you want to just quickly run through our predictions for the rest of the league?
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
All right, like we said earlier, we both got the Red Sox winning the AL East. I have the Guardians winning the AL Central, the Rangers winning the West, the Phillies winning the East in the NL, the Cubs winning the NL Central, the Doyers winning the NL West. We both said our Red Sox or our World Series predictions. I have the Dodgers over the Red Sox. I have Bobby Witt winning the AL MVP. Kyle Tucker winning the NL MVP in his first year playing at Wrigley. I did this with Shohei Ohtani excluded because I kind of figure that he's just a cheat code to win MVP pretty much every year that he's in the league for whatever league that he's in, especially if he's going to return to pitching this year. He's just that kind of player. So Shohei Ohtani excluded, I'm going with Kyle Tucker, and we'll see what kind of season Ohtani brings. We gave you the AL Cy Young. We both have Garrett Crochet. I have Yoshinobu Yamamoto winning the NL Cy Young. I think we kind of see him put it all together. This year was kind of rocky to start, and then he was injured for the bulk of the middle part of the season. Then when he came back, he was really effective again. My one concern with him is maybe the Dodgers try to limit some of their starters' innings, especially when they get down the stretch if they have such a big lead over the division or even like have that bye locked up. We'll see how they manage things because they also have so much pitching depth in AAA, so they can limit Yamamoto. We already know they're going to limit Sasaki's innings, which is why I, spoiler alert, didn't pick him to win the NL Rookie of the Year. I'm kind of concerned there. So we'll see what happens with Yamamoto. Rookie of the Year, I have Christian Campbell in the AL and Matt Shaw in the NL.
Yeah, I like all those picks. It's an interesting one with Yamamoto. I remember looking at the notes earlier and being like, I wanted to hear your explanation on that. But once you put it out there, I don't hate it.
I feel like Skeens was the like obvious pick, and I kind of want to go off the board there. I think it's Skeens to lose, obviously. I think Skeens is the best pitcher in baseball right now, and he's only in his going into his second year. So I think he's the obvious favorite, but I kind of wanted to go out of the box with that.
Yeah, no, I don't hate the take at all. So I'll fire mine off real quick. So yeah, I have the Sox winning the AL East. I have the Tigers winning the AL Central. I'm just pretty high on them. I think they brought in Jack Flaherty for a second time. Their rotation is obviously very good, especially with Jackson Jobe coming in there. And their lineup is pretty serviceable as well. AL West, I also have the Rangers. NL East, I have the Mets. I mentioned that I have them making the World Series. We'll see if that pans out, but I think we're looking at a big year for them. I also have the Cubs in the NL Central. I kind of teetered between them and the Brewers, but I think the Cubs added a lot more than the Brewers did. And the Brewers also lost Devin Williams, so that's a pretty tough loss there. And obviously, I have the Dodgers in the NL West. You heard my World Series take, Mets over Red Sox. I did also go with Bobby Witt to win the AL MVP. I don't see them giving it to Judge again, even if he does have a good year.
Unless he hits 60 bombs again.
Exactly, yeah. So it seems like Bobby Witt has kind of been, you know, banging down that door for the last couple years, and this is the year where they'll give it to him. I put Juan Soto as my NL MVP, and Shohei Ohtani excluded as well. He hasn't won one yet. And I think this could be the year he
which is crazy. Finally,
exactly. I remember we were talking about that on episode one when we were still hoping that he may have came here. But I'm really high on the Mets this year. I'm high on Juan Soto, and we'll see if that pans out. But yeah, I have Crochet winning the AL Cy Young. I also have Paul Skenes winning the NL Cy Young. I know it's the basic pick, but to me, it just seems like he has all of the voters.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, he's locked in on him right now. And
his girlfriend is a PR machine. Like everything about Paul Skenes is an absolute PR machine. He's fucking sick at baseball. He pumps 100. Like the only thing going against him is that he's on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like he's massive amongst the youths because of Livy Dunn. And like, it just, he's so sick. And if the Red Sox aren't going to pay Garrett Crochet, I can't help but hope it's to back up the Brinks truck in 6 years for Paul Skenes.
Man, that would be sick. We're talking about a guy who could have multiple Cy Youngs before he's like 27.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy like we're talking about. Was it Kershaw that won MVP and Cy Young in the same year? Like, I think he has that kind of potential. Like, obviously it's only been 1 year, but I just told you, I think he's the best pitcher in baseball by far. And he's 22 years old. I think he, going into spring training last year, was the best pitcher on earth. And he was in AAA for half the season. So it's just, we're talking about a guy who, if everything pans out and obviously injuries happen and who knows what can happen over the course of a career, but I think we're looking at like a potential Hall of Famer and maybe a top 10 to 15 pitcher of all time.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm getting in on that train pretty early. But my AL Rookie of the Year is Roman Anthony, and my NL Rookie of the Year is Dylan Cruz.
I like that.
A guy who got a little bit of run last year, didn't show a whole lot, but I think he will be really good this year. I also like James Wood. I don't know if he's considered a rookie anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if he lost his eligibility or not. I think he might have. I'll quickly look at the odds to see if he's listed. But I want to say he lost his eligibility last year.
I'm pretty sure he did too. And I'm also higher on Cruz than I am James Wood. But I think the Nationals could be sneaky, like middle of the pack this year rather than like really bad. So we'll see there. But I like a lot of their young gun, CJ Abrams. And they also brought in Nathaniel Lowe, who I like as well. But that's my little Nationals tangent. Those are my picks for the MLB awards this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. James Wood isn't listed on the odds at all. It's Roki Sasaki at plus 225, Cruz at plus 350, Matt Shaw plus 425, and then we get into Bubba Chandler, Jordan Lawler, Drake Baldwin, some of the lower end guys on that scale. So Wood definitely graduated because he would be listed above all of those guys. But I like the Dylan Cruz pick. I went with Shaw because I'm like, I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm a Red Sox fan. And I hate when teams are like, oh, like the Cubs are my NL team. Like, no, you don't have an NL team. You have one team that you root for. You pick one, and that's the team you're stuck with for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I'm not a Cubs fan, but obviously living in Chicago for however many years, I lived a hop, skip, and a jump away from Wrigley Field for 2 years. So I am a little bit impartial to the Cubs. And I also like Matt Shaw. When his draft class, I think it was 2 years ago, he was a guy that was linked to the Red Sox a whole lot coming out of Maryland. So I did a decent bit of research on him, just looking into him ahead of the draft, and I kind of liked the and I liked the profile. I was pretty disappointed when he went ahead of the Sox, so he's a guy I've been impartial to since his draft year, so that's why I went with him.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I also am a little bit hesitant to put Roky Sasaki because, like you mentioned with Yamamoto, they could be looking at a 6-7 man rotation at points throughout.
And we already know that they said that they were going to limit Sasaki's innings, especially because was it the shoulder thing that popped up a little bit early in the spring. So I think they're going to be really careful with him, especially when you consider he's what, only 22 years old. So like there's no, and when you have that kind of depth and you have a guy coming in and playing professional baseball in America, like an entire ocean away from what he's known his entire life, like I can see them totally slow playing him, especially if it comes down to the end of the season. They're like, all right, well, Sasaki's given us 100 innings, like let's shut him down till the playoffs.
That was I always like doing the predictions beforehand. It's just fun to get back into the mindset, and you know, maybe all of our picks are wrong, but still it's fun to lay them all out there. Did we want to preview the first series real quick?
Yeah, let's just run through it quickly. I don't think there's anything like super groundbreaking because we don't have any stats from or any point of reference for this year. Game one, Thursday, 4:10 first pitch. We got Nathan Eovaldi versus Garrett Crochet. This is one I have circled on my my favorite day of the year, just hammering nerfies across the board on opening day. This is one of the nerfies I'm going to be taking. Old friend Nathan Eovaldi, we know that they obviously have Jacob deGrom, who they're pushing back to Sunday to start. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what the reasoning behind that is. I'm sure it's just the way that things kind of broke in camp. I am a very strong proponent of your rotation when you start the year doesn't matter at all, because you move things around based on off days, how guys are pitching, injuries, etc. So like whatever, who cares like what the rotation is when you enter the season. Second game is going to be Jack Leiter versus Tanner Houck. Jack Leiter is the guy that I really wanted in the 21 draft. I think everybody really wanted in that 21 draft, and then was disappointed when he went to the Rangers at number two, right after Henry Davis. He has not put it together at not even just the major league level, in the minor league level either. He just walks the house right now. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does in a maybe full first year. We'll kind of have to see how things pan out. I mentioned that the Rangers have some injuries. John Gray, fractured wrist, is already on the 60-day IL, so he's out until the end of May. Cody Bradford, I don't know what his injury was, but even so, like if Jack Leiter's pitching well, who the fuck is Cody Bradford? Get him out here. Like he'll be in there. Tyler Molly, who is whatever, I think he's kind of a jag too. He's going game three opposite Walker Buehler. That one's at 7:05 on Saturday. And then game four, Jacob deGrom versus Richard Fitz on Sunday afternoon, 2:35 first pitch there. I don't have a whole lot on this one. It's fun that we get to see, I think, the two best teams in the AL playing in this first series.
Yeah.
I maybe don't think people are appreciating that enough, because I think the Rangers are kind of getting slept on a little bit. And I know there's been a lot of hype around the Red Sox, but I, like I said, they're still the second lowest odds to win the AL East. So I don't know where they stand in terms of winning the American League, but I think teams are still, or people are still kind of sleeping on the potential of the Red Sox. So fun that we get to see the, what I think is the two best teams to start off the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want to do a prediction for the first series?
Sure. I got them winning 3 out of 4, losing Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was going to go on that line of thinking too, and losing Sunday, because DeGrom versus Richard Fitz is a little tough. I know I'm very high on Richard Fitz, but you know, going against DeGrom when he's healthy, that's going to be tough. But
yeah,
the other three matchups look good.
Right. I could see this being a split, maybe you drop the opener in a heartbreaker, but I think that's a pretty evenly matched pitching matchup at least. And we'll see where things go from there. But like Tyler Mahle and Jack Leiter, like I like Jack Leiter as much as the next guy. He hasn't done it at the major league level yet. So I think that's a guy you can maybe feast on a little bit in that middle game. or I guess second game of the season on Friday night. And like I said, Tyler Mahle's just a jag in my eyes. So like, I don't see anything scaring. So maybe you're looking at a split, but we're 48 hours away from opening day. I'm going optimistic, 3 out of 4.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I'm sticking with you on that 3 out of 4. And yeah, 2 days away, definitely less than a week away.
Yeah,
from opening day. And yeah, that also means that the podcast episodes will be getting more consistent. So the plan is to hopefully get at least an episode a week out, and unpack the series as they come by and do predictions like we just did. But yeah, it'll be good to get some real storylines going too, aside from the sky is falling, Rafael Devers hates the Boston Red Sox, and you know who should and shouldn't make the major league roster. So that is almost over, and this is going to be a big year for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Very excited to get through it. I mentioned it earlier, but you have the initial, like, let's fucking go, spring training, baseball's back. Like, the first couple games, you're like, hell yeah, let's do it. And then you really get into the minutia of spring training, you're like, oh my God, this is so fucking boring. And like, you get into the late innings and it's like, all right, fucking Johnny Slapdick's at second base and fucking, and who knows is at short and whatever. Like, I mean, it helps that, at least for us, like I am a proud loser and I am a proud prospect nerd and all that things, all those things. So I like seeing Justinson Garcia out there, and I like seeing Mikey Romero out there and play well. But like at a certain point, I've just for like the last 2 weeks, I'm like, all right, we just need to get to opening day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely with you. It became a slog as spring training rolled on, but it's almost done. Last technical spring training game is, in Mexico for the Red Sox before opening day on Thursday. So as always, thank you for listening. Enjoy your opening day, and we'll check in with you guys again soon.
See you.